And welcome to everybody on YouTube as we launch into another edition of Off the Hook Overtime. Did we all make it, Rob? I see you there. We actually are on the air. You're holding up the sign telling us that. You can also just tell us that. That way we can check your microphone, too. It's not working.
We're testing.
Okay. And Alex, you just jump back into your chair. Welcome back.
I am here. Present.
And Kyle, you're right in front of me, so I imagine you made it.
Once again, over here.
Well, now, what are we watching on the TV here? That apparently there's a rocket launch taking place in less than 3 minutes. Okay, I guess we have to watch this.
Yeah, this is the Inspiration 4 launch.
Inspiration 4?
From Pad 39A.
There are three other Inspirations.
Sure.
Well, there must have been. Okay. Well, hopefully they all turned out okay. So this is interesting because this is they have four people strapped in on a SpaceX rocket, and these are all civilians. These are all random people picked off the street.
Well, they
had no idea this was going to happen to them today.
They have pretty adventurous stories, and some are pilots, some are mechanically inclined.
Do I have it wrong? They did know about it. They're part of, okay.
So there's a doctor on board.
Months of training. Okay, but there's no actual astronaut.
No, right. They're like unofficial. Well, this will make them official, I think. But They're going to be running some experiments. They're going to be trying to inspire us.
This is the experiment. It's putting them in a rocket ship and launching them into space. And
they're well aware.
It's not just this namby-pamby thing like Richard Branson did, you know, where he just comes right back down. No, they're staying up for 3 days.
They're going higher than ever, too.
Higher than ever. They're passing the space station. They're going to wave as they go by.
Like 500 kilometers, I think.
It's pretty high up.
Ish.
And in 1 minute and 30 seconds. Are you guys able to see this, or are we going to be your voice, Alex and Rob?
I also can see it, yes. Okay. And I think there's a chat on the live stream, so I hope nobody says anything that offends Australia.
I see our listenership just dropped off, so I imagine everybody's jumping over to the channel where they can watch this instead of us. Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Judas, or all the people out there that...
Us 10 minutes. We'll be on SpaceX talking about
It's 1 minute away, so I really hope this goes well, because this is, I remember Krista McAuliffe, you know, in the Challenger disaster in 1986 and how horrible that was, because she was a civilian, and it looked like the space program was really going to new places, and unfortunately it didn't work out too well. Why are you over here, Kyle? You just ran behind me for some reason. Is there something going on with the feed?
Yeah, I just noticed the clock stopped, so maybe it's on their end.
Oh, the clock stopped.
Yeah, as you were describing it, your valiant description of this wonderful event.
It's like talking to Alex on Skype. He just froze. They're all frozen.
I think you guys must have frozen because I'm watching it launch right now.
This is insane. Wow. I cannot believe it. So they launched and we missed it. Hang on,
I can describe it for you guys. It's sort of a long rocket-shaped thing.
I've got a news channel on. You can shut up, Rob. I got it. We're watching a news channel.
I should be a commentator.
And they 13 seconds left.
It's already in.
We got to speak to YouTube about this. 8 seconds. 5 seconds. I could do this. 4, 3, 2, 1. There it goes. Usually it does that before you hit 1. The hold down clamps have released. Falcon 9, we have begun our flight. I'm reading what it says on the screen. It's definitely going in the right direction, so that's good. This is from Cape Canaveral. SpaceX has launched their first all-tourist crew into orbit. Well, they're not in orbit yet. They're on their way to orbit. So there they go. Wow.
This is really cool. They've got a viewing sort of like fishbowl, half a fishbowl kind of coop. It's called the cupola, but it's basically a double-paned observation window that you could actually fit a couple of people together observing, and it sort of attaches to one of the docking doors, I think, that since they're not actually docking with the space station like cargo supplies would, so they'll have this attachment to make their observations and document it over the several days they'll be there.
Wow, that is amazing. 3 days in space orbiting the Earth, so our best to them. They can pick us up, by the way, because FM signals travel into space. So I don't know. They're probably busy with other things, but they could be listening. And they're at max Q, largest amount of stress exerted on the vehicle right about now. I'm not sure how long it's going to take them to get into orbit. Probably a while, right?
You got to remember, Emmanuel, we're not on FM anymore.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I feel like I'm on radio, and I'm not. But they could. We found out there are stations that are simulcasting us on WBAI, but there might be stations that simulcast this. Who knows? You have our permission.
Yeah, it's not impossible.
I've wondered that.
It's not contained on the internet. I mean, YouTube sort of helps us distribute it, but it could go all over the universe. We're not trying to limit the use of the sound.
No, not at all. By the way, our phone number is 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. If you want to be a part of the show, call in, give us your opinions, your expertise, your news, as we watch these four tourists go into space. This has never happened before. This is really incredible. Something like this has never happened before. And here it is happening right in front of us. So hope it goes well. Hope it's the beginning of something new, where not just millionaires get to go up into space, and where we learn a lot more about the world surrounding us and just reach for the skies, I guess.
Absolutely. They're looking very, very good. I think the main part cut off.
Dragon capsule has separated from the Falcon 9 second stage. And I guess that's supposed to happen, right?
Yep. So they're on their way now. But it certainly is it's looking more like an actual space line, not an airline. But, like, you know, they're building all these things, and they've got ones they've already developed that are taking people places and doing demonstrations. And
they say we're not too far off from the day where space flight will be as, maybe not as common as air flight, but not that unusual, where basically you wind up going someplace on the other side of the world and you actually go into space for a little bit, because that gets you there a lot faster.
Yeah, it just it's less theoretical, very tangible, and it's great to see some of many people's dreams sort of materialize.
Mm-hmm. I imagine everyone's transfixed watching this. That's why they're not calling us, or the ringer's off again. One of those two. 802-321-4225. You can be the first caller just by dialing those numbers and speaking to us here on Overtime.
I'll check the phone.
Check the phone. Make sure the ringer is on, because if it's not on, we can't hear the people calling. It is on.
I just turned it off ear splitting. I figured that would...
What?
Well, it was set to ear splitting.
What's wrong with ear splitting?
You want it on ear splitting.
Well, that way people know the phone is ringing, you know, and there's no question about it. You guys feel free to say anything.
Sorry, I'm with one eye, I'm watching the launch on YouTube myself, which, for those of us listening to us on YouTube, you can have two YouTube windows open at once and have the sound on one and the picture on the other, and that works totally fine.
Yeah, can you talk to the people who are just watching the other one and not watching us? Can you talk to them? Convince them to come back.
And you can call us while you're watching.
But it's a beautiful launch, and, you know, the implications of... space being explored,
I think we
by
have a call.
Various types of people is kind of interesting.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it absolutely is. You know, while we're taking this phone call, Kyle, maybe you could find the Roku remote, because I swear I could rant an entire hour about Roku software.
This Roku comes from a very broken factory, and it's had a very troubled physical existence.
Wow, I can't even get out of the frozen screen. Do we have to unplug it again? And then it just reboots for a half hour over and over again.
More like Broku.
I think it needs...
Good one.
I think it needs the treatment.
All right, well, I'm going back to a commercial news network, which I didn't want to do. I wanted to watch the actual feed, but I guess I can't do that. All right, we have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off Look Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm okay. It's Phil from Missouri. I'm watching the launch, too. Well, you know, with Blue Origin, do you think they got Alexa on there?
Blue Origin got like built in, you said. That's funny. Maybe.
Just think about it. It's like Alexa, open garage door or something. Just something weird being said, and like It makes the rocket explode or something.
You know, we had a great idea before the show about Alexa, and I want to patent this right here. Where basically, if you're hard of hearing, okay, and you have an Echo device, obviously not just the audio device, but the Echo device that can do all kinds of other things, it can understand sign. You know, it basically, obviously the camera has to come on.
Well,
did they invent that already?
The Echo Show, right?
Does Echo Show understand sign?
I don't know, but it's got a camera on there.
It's got a camera on there. It doesn't mean it understands sign. So I want to patent that idea and make it mine and charge Amazon.
Well, you know, with the Echo, you can, like, make your own stories for it, right?
Yeah, I've heard words to that effect.
Yeah. I don't see why you wouldn't be able to. I mean, I guess you could do it with something like a Kinect from the Xbox, too, right?
Yeah, you know, I imagine it's probably already been done. I probably am late to the game on this.
Well, we can always Google it.
I think it's harder than we might imagine.
Yeah. Well,
that kind of attitude, Kyle, would not get you into space like these four people are doing right now, okay? Yeah, it's harder than you might think.
I'm sorry for my
are they going to the space station itself?
No, they're dissing them. They're bypassing them. They're going higher than the space station.
Wow.
Yep.
I don't know if I trust them enough to do that.
I don't know if you can see this craft. You can see the space station when it flies over, but this I'm not sure. I'm going to look into it.
Well, I know that you could see the shuttle when the shuttle was going to the space station. You could see a dock there.
Yeah, you could see. Sometimes you could see both at the same time. You could see the shuttle on the way to the space station. That was really cool.
Yeah. Did you hear about the Apple exploit? Some Israeli spyware thing.
Yes, that was one of the stories that we didn't get to tonight. But yeah, this is the exploit where you don't have to do anything to be exploited. It just comes onto your phone. It's pretty scary. Well, I know, Alex, you're a Mac user. I don't mean anything bad by that, but this must have concerned you quite a bit.
Oh, absolutely, and I think it concerns and should concern everybody who's using an iPhone. This is a particularly nasty zero-click vulnerability that's built into the iMessaging system.
Zero-click. That's just amazing.
Yep, zero-click. I mean, you just sent a message, and it exploited an image processing vulnerability that was built directly into the iMessage software on iOS devices themselves. There's a lot of issues, I think, that arise from something like this, but I think two of them are worth addressing on this show. And one is that there's always going to be a market for this type of exploit, whether the customer is the United States government, the United Arab Emirates. I mean, there are other stories that came out about this dark matter group using similar iMessage exploits and involving, I believe, members of the former members of the United States intelligence community assisting with that as well. So there's these two iMessage stories that just came out recently, but it also goes to the difficulty of regulating and controlling what's done with these particular exploits. A lot of people are always pointing the finger at the NSO group, and look, I'm not saying that they are innocent parties here or that they should be completely absolved of guilt, but to a certain extent, because there's always going to be a market here, it's very difficult to regulate what the end user does with this type of power. There certainly are legitimate reasons for governments to be interested in these types of exploits for either intelligence collecting purposes or for the lawful collection of evidence. Let's say if it's properly regulated by a search warrant or some kind of judicial activity. But the second issue, I think, is more fundamental and more hacker-focused, really, which is that it's about – this is at root an issue of user control, because this iMessage application – itself is something that's on every single iOS device, and we have very little power over it as users. In fact, we can't delete the iMessage device, iMessage application itself. And the configuration that goes into iMessage is basically whether you want your iMessage account to be connected with the rest of your devices. I'm not really aware of there being any other control over iMessage itself. And because it's a consistent vector across every single iOS device, that is going to be a very popular vector of attack. It's an application that's found on every single iOS device, whether it's an iPhone, whether it's an iPad, and even iMacs, or you know, desktop computers themselves have iMessage devices. But I believe it was the iOS exploit that these bad actors were looking to, or actually did, in fact, exploit. But so I think if we want to get to the root of the cause here, it can really be fundamentally about user control. If users had more rights over the iPhone's operating system and what default apps were installed on it, then the more security conscious, the more security minded among us, and those who had a need, let's say, to have more security baked into an already pretty secure phone, could disable that application, could delete it or configure it in such a way that it didn't even allow images to be sent to it. That, and because that's what I meant when I was saying that that's the consistent vector of attack going across devices. So two issues. One's the marketplace, and the other is user control.
I agree. I think you've got a great point there. The one thing I heard, and I'm not sure if there's any clarification of it, but I think in saying that, like, a government needs, in certain situations, I've questioned why they would need an exploit if it's lawful, you know? I mean, I think there's a little bit of gray there, that more gray than being so cut and dry. And it also puts in a strange position, like, you mean the American government, but wouldn't Apple be allowing, or wouldn't the exploit being a part of a private security platform, wouldn't that allow any government? If this is the only way for them to do their lawful work, it seems like it opens it up widely under the cover of an American jurisdiction, but we're talking about legitimate legal cases. I mean, don't you have discovery and forensic e-evidence procedures? And like, if wouldn't they be able to go to a telecommunication provider and say, I need logs of something? I mean, I guess when it's end-to-end in iMessage, that's the distinction? Is that
right? Yeah, that's the distinction I'm drawing there. You're absolutely right. I think you could use legal process and obtaining a warrant. Let's say you need to go to AT&T back in the old days, or MCI, and get those communications or that metadata. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Kyle. I think this is an issue that arises primarily from the use of end-to-end encryption. But also, you're right, too, I think, in that if this type of power, this type of exploit, could be sold essentially to the highest bidder, that becomes a problem too. So, you know, it's something we say quite often, I feel like, is, you know, with great power comes great responsibility here, and you have to be very careful about the end users to whom you give this power. And I think, you know, it's, you want to make sure you don't put this power in the hands of a regime that's going to abuse it. There's going to be more. And I believe that the NSO group, you know, in the wake of stories coming out over the last couple of weeks, and I think even when I was absent, Rafael Satter of Reuters came on and talked about that issue. But they pledged to take, I think, more of a – I believe they have – to take more of a look at the end users who are going to be having this type of power and these types of vulnerabilities in their hands. And of course, this is why we have sanctioned regimes to a certain extent. You know, the international sanctions should apply to regimes that engage in persistent and pervasive human rights abuses, monitoring of dissidents, things like that. But to a very large extent, our international sanctions and those types of penalties only reach a small handful of those regimes. And so perhaps, again, if we get to a more fundamental issue, we should be trying to exert more international pressure over the types of technologies that regimes that engage in human rights abuses more generally have.
I also wonder if we were supposed to know this, or if this was something that was just supposed to be a part of the new OS, and because there was much more scrutiny under the circumstances that it was found quickly, because it sounds like NSO trying to make their old service work on the new platform. Is that wrong? Like,
I don't know.
Going back to the well for more sort of thing. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. But again, I think, you know, the latest news on this comes again from Citizen Lab, if I recall correctly, which is pretty amazing. And they're doing an incredible amount of important research coming out of this, Toronto based Canadian, fairly small outfit. They're punching, I think, well above their weight, mm-hmm. and the types of research and data that's been coming out of there would certainly make them, in my opinion, a target of foreign governments too. They've really been in the news quite a lot lately, and I think we have to hand it to them for the types of attention to detail and the forensic work that they've been doing, because that's how they identified this particular exploit was through very, very careful data forensics.
Absolutely. We need more like them. We're going to move on, caller. Anything else you wanted to add?
Well, the LAPD has this data collection thing they want to start up or already started up that's collecting social networking information.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to remember the name of it. There's the Guardian. There's an article on it on the Guardian. It's kind of like a pre-crime thing, you know, from like Minority Report. They're trying to predict. They're taking data sets and like, well, this is where crime is committed the most, and yada yada yada.
This sounds like digital broken windows, or digital stop and frisk. You know.
Well, the thing is, it's like, okay, if you're misreporting the crimes, right? If you're like misreporting arrests and everything, the data set's gonna be off anyway. Social media, you know, it's a private site, and they make everything you say on there public, mm-hmm. where you can just Google a response you made, and unless you say your profile to private, you know, they can, there's not much you can do about it unless you just quit Facebook.
That's true.
Which
I don't think is a bad idea.
Well, you know, with the insurrectionists, I mean, that's where they mostly go to, you know, do their planning or whatever they're doing. I don't know. It's like a bad comedy skit when you what half of these guys are doing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. They basically indicted themselves on many instances.
Yeah. One guy got called in a garage. The probation officer just happened to show up at the right time, and he was on his phone in the garage. He thought that hiding in the garage. Getting on Facebook or whatnot when you're not supposed to, was going to, wow. like, keep somebody from hiding them. They just happened to open a garage door or something like that, and there he was. One dude was bragging about it to an off-duty FBI officer, agent or something.
Yeah,
like
the tattoo, artist. Yeah, yeah.
Well, the scary thing about it is these guys are really violent and everything. You know, we laugh at it, but the fact of the matter is, they're willing to kill over this stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But you know, we have to laugh to a degree, but we also cannot lose sight of the seriousness of this. In fact, coming up this Saturday, we might see a repeat of that in cities all throughout the nation. I know there's going to be a big demonstration in D.C. of right wing people, but also this is supposedly happening in state capitals everywhere. You know, obviously, people are worried that something bad could happen. I guess we'll just have to wait it out and see how it goes.
Yeah, and especially with, I don't know, Woodard put out a new book called Paramount. You probably heard about it, where Trump was like, they were worried Trump was going to send in the military to invade, like, China or something like
right.
Like, send nukes that way. Keeping power and whatnot, but...
Well, it's kind of good to realize that there are grown-ups in the room that recognize the danger and are ready to step in case, you know, push comes to shove. I always thought that was the case. Didn't see much indication of it over the 4 years, but I figured after the 4 years we'd hear about it, and that's kind of what this is.
But there's some real stupid stuff being thrown around that. I was listening to callers on Washington Journal this morning, and somebody called in all mad because that convinced them that Nancy Pelosi was really in charge. And I think that is so unfair because she was asking the the national security team, chiefs of staff, as an equal branch to the executive, the judiciary, and the legislature. So, I mean, to say she was in control, no, she was concerned, as she should be, doing her job, mm-hmm. where the executive was a bit absent.
Well, she was also competent, and that gave her a tremendous advantage, which wasn't
she
fair.
She appeared as though she was running the country. I could see how you might be confused and perhaps resentful uh-huh. that someone was actually doing work.
Yeah, no, there is definitely, there's resentment against people doing work, there's resentment against people wanting to be healthy, there's resentment against people wanting to be able to vote. I don't know what kind of world we're living in, but it's getting kind of weird and scary. Everybody, call it good hearing from you. Keep listening. Mm-hmm. And we're going to try and get another phone call, hopefully.
Okay.
Take care.
Well, the rocket ship hasn't blown up yet, so we're all good.
Bye to your dog, too.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Bob.
Take care. Go ahead, Rob.
Have fun.
The other side to the social media story, too, is, the cops are monitoring social media, but right. also it is so easy to get bad data into that data set. I mean, you can start up a social media with the name of whoever you want, with the picture of whoever you want. And so if there happens to be someone in your life who you would like the LAPD to be more interested in, you could very easily make that happen, given this monitoring they're doing. Not very many social media sites want to see your government ID or something when you sign up for a new account. And even the ones that do, it's easy to fake that. So this is dangerous because it's another example of them depending on bad data in order to find reasons to harass people.
Okay, we got Connecticut on the line. How you doing?
Absolutely. Hi, guys. This is Tim from Connecticut.
How you doing?
Not too bad, not too bad. I wanted to make mention something that used to happen to me when I was working and I was VPN'd into work. If I shut down all my work stuff and left that VPN up and then accidentally started up my Outlook, which automatically logs into my email accounts, I would get somebody hacked your password from Google, from AOL, from anything that I had ever touched before.
Wow. What do you think they believe is happening?
Well, they see me or somebody using my ID logging in from a different IP address.
A crazy block.
In my case, it would have been in the UK.
Okay. But don't they know about Outlook and things like that where this happens?
I don't think that they can take that as a guess that everybody happens to have a VPN that's going across the planet.
Except, you know, I wasn't running a VPN. I don't know what happened. I wasn't running a VPN. I was doing everything, you know, nice and normal. But how about this? If they do notice something like that, they ask you, hey, was this you? And if you say yes, they say, okay, sorry to bother you. And they move on. Instead, they say, well, now you have to go through all these steps and reset your password and all that when nothing happened.
Yeah, I notice my Google account when it's on my phone. If I log on to a different PC that it hasn't seen, uh-huh. I'll get a flash on my Google phone saying, somebody logged in at this address. Was that you? Yes, no.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I get that somebody was blocked and that someone has my password. And, yeah, I have mm-hmm. my password, Google. You don't have to freak out, but at least ask me the question and I'll tell you the answer. Instead, they've just made these assumptions. And then I get a lecture about how to better protect my security when there's absolutely nothing going wrong in the first place. I really resent these robotic...
That would change its IP address. Often, are you?
No, I'm not. Not really, but it does happen occasionally. If you use your phone, the IP is going to change. And we all know that.
Right. That's just one of the ways that it triggers for me.
Not as bad as my bank. Every time I use my bank, they claim they don't recognize my browser. I have not moved. I'm in the same place. The IP is the same. But every time I log in, they say, this is an unrecognized browser. And then they have to send me a code, which I have to my throwaway Gmail account, which invariably sends it to spam. So then I have to get it out of the spam folder. And by the time I do that, it's expired and I have to send it a second time just to pay a small bill with my bank. It's enough to drive you crazy.
I'm wondering if it thinks...
Do you have it? Type of maintenance program that goes and clears out cookies or caches?
No, I try to mind my own business. I try to not cause waves.
I'm thinking it thinks your phone and you logging in are in completely different areas because your phone might be using a booster that has a different geolocation and IP because it may be going through a VPN.
Okay, maybe, but, you know, it's not that unusual.
But, you know, like, it thinks because one might have totally different IPs and they're being used simultaneously that you couldn't possibly be in using two different devices in two different parts of the world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but people do things like that all the time, especially these days. So I don't...
Right, it was a guess.
It could be the right guess, but, you know, if they just ask you...
It's becoming more common.
Yeah, it's becoming more common. If they just ask, was this you, and you say yes, that should be the end of it.
Oh, but that would take work.
Of course. Yeah, we all want to avoid that.
Make you change passwords, that's free.
Uh-huh. I mean, twice in 1 week with Facebook. It's really silly. And here's something interesting. I changed it to the password I used a year ago, and it worked. You know, they say, don't use a password you used before. So now I know how long they store passwords for.
Interesting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it must have a rollover or timeout on how many times you can keep using a password. If you use your password and stick a digit on it and just increment the digit, that will work. It's not very secure. But at least it'll tell you how long before you can use that digit again, whether it's a 6 or 7 or 8 passwords.
It's just funny that they think I care about my Facebook account. I really don't. So if someone did get in, stop bothering me with it. I just, you know, leave me alone. I'll get to it when I get to it.
There are people that, you know, Facebook is very, very important to.
I know, and that's kind of what's led us into all the problems, but we'll get into that some other time.
Yes.
Anything else from your end?
Okay, I'll get off the phone and let somebody else call in.
Okay, well, thanks thanks for calling. Good hearing from you.
And for listening.
Yes.
Have a good one, guys.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
802-321-4225. 802-321-HACK is our phone number. We're on for a few more minutes. If you have anything to say, share, ask. We're here. We're not here next week, so this is your last chance for a couple of weeks.
Operators are standing by.
Yeah. Well, you're standing by.
Well, sort of slouching. Yeah.
Which you do have turned up really, really loud. So, and yeah, we do see caller ID. So we know that this person is... Where's 402? Is that... I'm going to guess 402, maybe Nebraska? Is that where this is?
Yep.
I got it right. Nebraska.
Wow.
Wow.
Yep,
okay.
Just outside of Omaha.
Cool. How you doing?
Good.
What's on your mind?
Hey, I just wanted to mention that in addition to your IPs being different and things like that to trigger the security alerts with Gmail, if you have your Gmail account and you have it as configured to be as secure as possible, you can't really use an unsanctioned SMTP or POP3 or IMAP client against the service. Like if you had just a Python script to send out a monthly newsletter or something, if you have the account bolted down to its highest security level, you'll get a Gmail back. They'll fail, and you'll get a Gmail that said, "Hey, somebody was trying to hit your account with some unsecure software." So if you want to do something like that, you actually have to lessen the security on it, and then you get kind of naggy emails every once in a while from the folks at Google saying, "Hey, why don't you secure your account?" And there doesn't appear to be any kind of a process to get a certificate or some kind of a key to you know use the maximum security and then still be able to automate your emails.
Yeah, that's you know pretty a pretty valid use, I think, and it should be allowed.
Yep, and there's a number of scripts that if you go out and search for a script to just send SMTP mail, a lot of the sample scripts use Gmail because it's so ubiquitous as an example. But you've got to be sure that your account is configured in such a way that what they deem kind of loose security has to be in place in order for those scripts to work.
Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well, and I think there's a not just scripts, there's also a command line utilities that are pretty good for sending just regular SMTP email through the command line. One of them is send email. You know, there's like send mail, right? Remember the send mail and the send mail bugs? Yes. Well, there's send email. So for those of you on Debian, just, you know, apt get install send email will work, and you can send email right from the command line. It's very exciting.
That is exciting.
Yeah, it is. I was only half sarcastic, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anything else, caller?
Nope, that was it, game.
Okay, well, thanks. That was very helpful. Take care.
Thank you.
That seems to explain the Outlook software that the other caller was talking about. I mean, that he was talking about third-party email.
Yeah.
And in his case, when he connects with a VPN, it sends off all these alerts.
This is a call from England. Hello, England. Go ahead. I think I freaked them out. Are you there? Is anyone there? Anyone from the UK? No? That was a call from England. I saw it on the screen.
Message received.
Yeah. Country code 44. Call us back. We like to hear from
we miss
different
you.
Countries. Yeah, absolutely. Ever since you left the planet. Or ever since things just went crazy on both sides of the ocean. 802-321-4225. Here it is again. Second time around. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello.
How you doing?
Greetings from London.
Yes, from London. Who is this?
This is Zap again.
It's Zap. All right. How you doing?
I'm doing okay, I suppose, but unfortunately I've got some bad news.
Okay.
One of our hackers has been backed up to the cloud.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Reverend Rhett passed away on the 16th of August in hospital, sort of suddenly. I only found out last week. It was too late to ring up the radio show then. The main reason I'm phoning is to let everyone know, but we've also got the funeral tomorrow.
Okay. And do you want to give us details? This is Reverend Rhett from, was it London?
Yeah, London 2600.
Okay. Do you want to give details as to where this will be?
Yeah. Yeah, it's at Mortlake Crematorium tomorrow at 3:20 p.m. There's more information on my Twitter account, which is at Funsox, F-U-N-S-O-X, and a bunch of us are going to be meeting in a bar sort of around about 2 o'clock, and then we're all going to head off down there. So there'll be a good representation from London 2600.
Could you tell us something about Reverend Rhett?
I'm not too sure if you ever met him. He was quite a character. We called him the King of Wi-Fi. He was very good at Wi-Fi hacking, allegedly.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We got some memories of him going to trade shows and doing shenanigans and antics.
Uh-huh.
Still can't really think what we can say on the radio. I don't know. We don't have a statute of limitations in the UK, unfortunately.
Right. You're also not on the radio, but the statute of limitations still would apply regardless.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot. You're on YouTube. Yeah, you're right. I just thought I'd ring in and let everyone know and you know, we're going to have a good day tomorrow. It'll be the first time I've seen most of the people, maybe in something just under 20 years or 18 months since the pandemic, because I'm not going to the meetings.
Right. Well, sad to hear this. It seems like we're hearing news like this all too often. Thanks for letting us know.
Yeah, well, we all got old, basically. We used to be kids, and, you know, as you get older, things like this happen. First it's the weddings, then the babies, then it's the funerals.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to look at it, but I like to think that there's still a little bit more that we can do. Alex, you had something to say?
Yeah, Zap, Alex here. I'm sorry to hear this, and I wanted to ask you, because I met so many people when I went to the London 2600 meetings, and obviously chief among those personalities was, of course, you. But, you know, did I ever meet him? Was he around the same time, same years as I was, 2014, 15, 16, et cetera?
No, he wasn't. He actually dropped out of the scene due to his health.
Okay.
We try to keep tabs on him to make sure he was okay. I think it's called stalking or spying, but it's just concern from fellow hackers. Mm-hmm. I actually found out of somebody who else doesn't attend the meetings anymore. He sent me an email directly and asked me to let everyone know, and I promised him my words, and that's exactly what I've done.
Yeah. Well, send our very best to the rest of the crew out there in London.
Yeah. And
yeah, we'll do. I'll mention it to everyone.
Well, good to hear from you, Zap. I wish you under happier circumstances, and I hope that we have many happier circumstances in the future to look forward to.
Well, if there's any news, I will be ringing in again.
Good. All right. It's probably late over there, though, right? So get some sleep.
We do miss you.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Take it easy.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. That's Zap from London. And yeah, if you're ever over there, Zap's the person to take care of you. Yeah. All right, 802-321-4225. 802-321-HACK is our phone number. We're only going to be on for a few more minutes, and we're not going to be on next week. So if there's something you want to say, now is the time to start dialing or pushing buttons or whatever it is you do to make a phone call these days.
Speak it. You could speak your phone
number. You could speak the phone number. That's right. You could do that.
There's things that hear numbers and will dial.
Hey, Alexa, call. You could even just tell her to call us because you've already programmed our number into speed dial somewhere. You could be in a car. You could tell your car to call us.
Okay. We need a different name for
you could dial zero and tell the operator or ask the operator nicely to call us. And she might still do it.
What's like the hacker equivalent voice assistant? Because it's not Alexa. Doesn't she have an evil twin or something?
This is actually a call from the same area code.
Intellicall operator services.
Okay, this is got to be...
Boris Johnson.
Boris Johnson.
He's calling collect. However, collect calls are not allowed to your number. Would you like to pay for this call with a credit card?
Absolutely not.
Call, press 1.
No.
To deny this call, press 0 now. Please enter your choice.
Press 0 now, but no offense to the caller. Go ahead, press 0. Did they just hang up or did they say? No, they don't even say anything. Wow. Okay, I don't know who that was, but it was clever. It came from an 802 area code, which is what we're giving out. But it's what Rebel demonstrated last week. What I believe, Alex, you also demonstrated that if you make a call through that IntelliDial whatever service, you can call collect to certain places, but apparently our number is not one of them.
Boris Johnson would.
That was a nice touch. Okay, now we have a call from North Carolina, it looks like. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Is that me?
Wait, not North Carolina. 909 is California. I'm sorry. I was thinking 919. What was it? And 910. But yeah, 909, that's California.
That's California.
All right.
Listen, just a quick question. You guys were talking this afternoon about the situation at the MTA in New York.
Yes.
The wrong button. Back in December, or maybe it was January, the entire island of Bermuda lost its electric power. And it was sort of written off as, well, one of these things that just sort of happened. And at the time, I mean, the coverage kind of, I shared it, I think, with you guys, and it just sort of disappeared into the ether. And it was sort of, I think, given away that well, this was an equipment failure. But I sort of wondered at the time whether it was somebody playing with their, control system,
because
they could, because it's a small place, but it's an important place.
Right.
It's the home of a lot of... Oh, by the way, this is Eric in California. I apologize.
Hi, Eric.
Jumping right into this. And I just sort of wondered if it was something that happened that other people paid attention to, because either it could be that they're showing that somebody is showing another entity, hey, this is what we can do if you don't, if we want to. And Bermuda's a place, of course, that's important in the world finance network.
Right, yeah, now. It could be just a very subtle message that, watch what happens tomorrow at 3 o'clock, and all of a sudden something happens at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, how easy
or
is it to...
Or something and the thing was, that was a situation where, like, the whole island lost power. It wasn't just people who were connected by wire. It was right in the center of the capital, the capital city. It's a small small place, but it's the city. It was people that might never lose power even during a hurricane lost power. But then here you have that situation in the MTA where somebody pressed a button, and they admitted they pressed the button. And I wonder if there's also a factor where it becomes so embarrassing as to how this happened that these things kind of get, we can't tell you what happened because it was so stupid on our part. So we'll blame somebody else, or we'll just say it's all secret and you can't learn about this.
Yeah, you see that so many times on an individual basis where something happens, someone does something stupid, and they immediately blame hackers. Say, oh, I was hacked. I didn't say that. Yeah. Someone else said that. And, of course, it always comes out that, in fact, yes, it was them. You could be talking about the same thing here where somebody did something incredibly foolish. I don't know, in the case of the MTA, if the person who pressed the button ever actually admitted it or if they just determined that somebody must have done that. Human error, I think is the leading contender for things like this. Yeah. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, building on the caller's skepticism of the official explanation here, I've had a theory. And again, this is complete speculation, but I think it would make sense. If you think
Oh, he did it again. Look at that. It's like in the middle of a thought, too. It looks like he's still thinking.
I'm worried about his
He's just frozen like that. And I was looking forward to this.
I hope he remembers what he was going to say.
Carlo, will you stay with us until Alex gets resuscitated and he can ask his question? Wow.
He's been hacked again.
Apparently, that must be it, because the alternative is too foolish to even think of.
I'm wondering if it's getting harder because people expect evidence now when something is, you know, blamed on that.
What tells Alex that he's no longer speaking to us? How does he know?
If he sees us freeze, he should know that.
Well, we're not frozen. We're moving fine.
We could be
moving fine for us, but we could be frozen for him as he is for us.
I don't follow. How could we be frozen for someone else?
Well, presumably his connection's poor, he would have trouble seeing us. If he was having trouble being seen, right?
Yeah, see, that's where I'm losing you. I see you moving. I feel myself moving. And now I see Alex moving. So that proves that I'm right. Okay, go ahead, Alex. Do you remember what you were saying?
Yeah. Did you hear anything that I said?
Or no, you pretty much cut off right at the beginning. So start over.
Oh, my God. I only even realized and stopped talking when I saw Rob just frozen in a weird position. And I think, well, he doesn't usually look that weird. I mean, he looks odd. But why?
Okay, so you're actually going to accuse us of being frozen when you were the one who was frozen.
I was, mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So here's what I was going to say to our skeptical caller, which is that if you think – back to the Cold War, where we had something called mutually assured destruction with the Soviets. So, you know, if we launched a nuclear strike against them, then they would launch a nuclear strike against us, and it would all end in tears for everyone, right? So that was this MAD principle, mutually assured destruction. Well, we don't necessarily have that anymore. But we still have nuclear weapons and things, but we're dealing with a different type of weapon. These, you know, quote unquote cyber weapons that advanced cyber adversaries are developing. And, you know, again, this is complete speculation, but one theory about these things happening on a regular basis like this, you know, electrical grids going out, subway systems going out, is that it's a demonstration by another nation that they have burrowed into our infrastructure. And it's a proof of concept and showing what can be done in the event that, let's say, the United States or another nation were to go into their infrastructure and do something like turn off the lights or turn off the power or shut down a transit system. And so these are demonstrations of capabilities, perhaps.
Isn't that what we were talking about?
I don't think so.
Thing in Bermuda might have simply just been showing what could be done?
Well, Alex is saying it's specifically nation-state actors. I think the caller was saying this could be rivals. This could be someone that knows industrial competition, like a powerhouse in one electronics or mega company says, we know 90% of your assets are here. How easy will it be for you to trade quick when there's no power on the island?
Okay, but it's the same thought behind it. Whether it's mobsters or a nation state, it's still a demonstration of what could be done.
Yeah, that was the only distinction I heard.
To each other, but for the principle, not necessarily to demonstrate that it can be done in and of itself, but for the principle of demonstrating that if you do this to me, I will do it for you. It's a tit for tat situation.
Okay, I can accept that that's possible. It could also just be incompetence or maybe bad infrastructure. There's all sorts of reasons. You never really know.
Totally agree. Yes.
Caller, anything else you want to share?
Yeah, no, that's just pretty much it. I just like, because I you know, if this situation with the MTA, where it was literally that little plastic dome was missing from the stop switch, the kill switch, and that they, of course, it is interesting that it was finally admitted to. But then again, look, you just shut down the New York City subway, where most of it, for an hour and a half, and that should never have been able to happen.
And yet it happened again only a couple of weeks later because of weather. Yeah. Wow.
Well, that's all. I just wanted to bring up that point. I appreciate your show very much.
Thanks. And by the way, since you're calling from 909, I just wanted to point out that you have the area code that takes the longest to dial on a rotary phone.
That is correct.
The opposite of 212. It's like you're on the other end of the spectrum. It doesn't make a difference now.
I think it was one of the last ones to be assigned before the system switched to allowing, you know, other combinations.
That is true, because when I was part of a hacker group that was targeting Telenet, They would have, it's a packet switch network, and they would always, the addresses of computers would be area code plus two or three digits. So 21250 would be a computer. 21251 would be another computer. 909 was internal Telenet computers because there was no 909 area code. And it didn't seem like there ever would be because who would want 909? So it takes so long to dial. So it's interesting history there.
Absolutely. I know, but there was, of course, the 310 and the, what was it, 310, 410, and 510 were telex?
Yes, for a while until they became area codes.
Area codes, too.
Yep.
Yep. Anyways, that's all. I just wanted to bring that point up. Thank you very much for your show.
All right, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
It's always
good when you can say something about someone's area code, you know? It's like visiting a country and saying, hey, I know who was once president here or something like that. You
your
know,
national dish.
Or you make cheese. Something, yeah.
All five of your national birds.
This is Vermont again. Let's see if it's another funny recording. Good evening.
In telecall operator services.
The final frontier.
Is calling collect. However, collect calls are not allowed to your number. Would you like to pay for this call with a credit card?
Let's not say anything.
To accept this call, press 1. To deny this call, press 0 now. Please enter your choice now.
What was the recording? What did it say? Something about Frontier?
Well, vote
the
for...
Final Frontier.
I think it's the Final operator Frontier. Services.
Despite the fact that last week was Star Trek Day.
Is calling collect.
You talked over it, Rob.
Collect calls are not allowed to your number. Would you like to pay for this call with a credit card? To accept this call, press 1. To deny this call, press 0 now. Please enter your choice now.
Now, what if I couldn't enter any choice? What if, the phone was strapped to my head and I couldn't even hang up? What would happen?
In telecall operator services.
This just goes on forever?
The final frontier.
Is calling collect.
I heard it.
However, collect calls are not allowed to your number. Would you like to pay for this call with a credit card?
This is a good way to annoy somebody forever.
To accept this call, press 1. To deny this call, press 0 now. Please enter your choice now.
So if I don't have a touch-tone phone or a way to hang up, I've lost my phone line. Is it going to hang up? Oh, good. It hung up. It hung up. All right. Well, thanks for the fun, whoever is doing that. 802-321-4225 for people who want to speak to us by voice, the traditional way of making a phone call. Only less than 10 minutes, I think, before we got to get out of here because we have lives to lead and other things to do as well. Rob, go ahead.
While we're waiting, I hate to take the wind out of your sails, Emmanuel, but I did a search on GitHub for the term sign language, and there are so many nice open source projects that are working on recognizing sign language gestures with a webcam.
Mine would be finished. Okay. Mine would be complete. that was what was unique about my idea. Theirs are in development, but mine would be finished. See? So
they all need to pay you basically.
Yeah. That's what I'm getting at.
That's what you're saying.
It's the American way.
There we go.
All right. 802-321-4225. 802-321-HACK is our phone number. And, we can tell people even on YouTube to support WBAI. There's no rule against that. Give to WBAI.org or 212-209-2950. Just remember to tell them that you're calling on behalf of Off the Hook. And it would definitely be a feather in our cap for that to happen.
Yeah, and you sign up for BAI Buddy. You don't really need to maintain it. Mm-hmm. It's just automatically withdrawn. It can be a nice... easy amount, and it really helps.
All right, this person figured out how to block that caller ID, so we have no idea where they're calling from. Good evening.
Yes, hi, Emmanuel.
It's Rebel. Who else would know how to use caller ID blocking? Wow, congratulations.
Hi, I was just wondering, what is Telenet?
What is Telenet? Really? You don't know what Telenet is?
I might have known years ago, but just brief me on it. And by the way, an update, I was calling because I had an update on the collect call thing.
Was that you?
No, that wasn't me.
That was somebody else.
That
wow.
wasn't me calling.
That's kind of scary.
But I have an update on when I called myself collect with that number that Alex gave me, the 321. It wasn't 1-800-COLLECT, but it was... Well, I did it with 1-800-COLLECT.
So we're just going to forget about the Telenet question. You're just going to move on from
no,
that.
It's...
I'm going to ask the Telenet question. But the update is that I called myself collect, and I thought I would get a bill with my Sprint bill or T-Mobile bill or whatever on my cell phone. But they call you... They just call you and saying, I think they email you or text you saying, you accepted a collect call. The charges are $10 for 1 minute. Would you like to pay with a credit card or whatever? Like, I thought they billed my cell phone. So I'm just going to, what if I just don't answer? And can I build my cell phone? And
well, wait, hold on a second. You're saying that you already accepted the collect call and they're sending you a message afterwards asking for your credit card?
Right, like a couple of hours there or a day after.
Why didn't they ask you for your credit card number when the call came in?
Like I don't know.
Just did here.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, I just wouldn't answer that message.
Yeah, I would wait that out, Rebel. Your instant, your gut's probably right.
Yeah, I don't think they can bill your phone. I'm pretty sure they can't just bill your phone.
That's what I thought they did, that they billed your phone. They said if we can now make collect calls to cell phones. I thought they had arrangements with cell carriers that they billed the cell phone.
They do with short codes.
Yeah, it sounds like that's true. But it sounds like there has to be a credit card involved somewhere.
They're saying it up front. Yeah, it has to be.
So they said, okay, give us your credit card number to accept that because you accepted a collect call. I'm just going to skip that part.
Wouldn't expect anything less.
Okay. What about Telnet? I briefly...
Okay, you're talking about Telnet or Telenet. They're two different things. Telnet is how people used to connect.
I know what Telnet. Okay. I know what Telnet is on the internet.
Okay.
But Telnet is like not fax.
Does anybody still use Telnet? No. Okay, I'll tell you right now. Telnet was a packet switch network. That used to be owned by GTE. I don't think they're around anymore at all. But it was a way that you could call a local phone number and connect to computers all around the world, or at least all around the country. And it's how I got into trouble because I was doing that locally, hacking into systems in various parts of the nation, schools, banks, government agencies, you name it. You just would enter the area code and either two or three digits after that, and it would connect. And you'd be at 300 baud or 1200 baud, and you'd be able to try default passwords and things like that. So it saved you the long distance charge of calling. This was in the 80s, and I'm pretty sure a little bit of the 90s.
But this is different than Telnet, though, of course.
Telnet is a function of connectivity on the internet. I don't know if anybody still uses that protocol anymore.
Well, they shouldn't.
Because
everything's out in clear text.
Yeah, it's like SSH. You know, SSH is encrypted. Telnet is not.
Yeah, sometimes it's used when you're doing like local stuff. To access some kind of embedded device or like a switch or some kind of networking equipment or a small computer, you can get in there and work with the configurations, but generally online you want something better.
I can't remember the last time I used Telnet. Can you remember the last time you used Telnet?
Like Telex?
It's got nothing to do with Telex, but that's something else. Yeah. Are we just going through the tel prefix tonight? Is that what we're doing?
Well, actually, yeah, because Telex was like a one area code, like Telex, I remember some old business like brochures that hey, our Telex number is 910 something.
Yeah, I think 310 or something 10. Oh, no, 710. That's what it was.
Yeah.
I think that's
but
what
710
it was.
710 is now the government's area
now
code.
It's the, that's a very mysterious area code. Rebel, if you can find out something about the 710 area code, I would really appreciate it.
Well, I try calling it. It asks for a PIN or number or something.
I can't reach a single phone number in that entire area code. I can't figure it out. So I would like to know more about that.
Right. It asks for an identification. I think it's like government, like if a congressman wants to call another congressman, they use that number or something.
Well, that sounds like the old ARPANET, where there was a different phone network that people inside the military could use and kind of bypass the regular phone network and get priority and things like that. You know, we need some articles on these things. This is fascinating stuff, and it's still around, a lot of it.
Telex was customer to customer and sort of a precursor to the fax machine. So it was connecting teleprinters that would send written messages like post-World War II.
Okay.
So also GTE was acquired by Bell Atlantic in 2000 and then got gobbled up by Verizon.
Wow. Remember MCI? They also got gobbled up by Verizon. Yeah.
But wasn't it the merger? I think they merged GTE and Bell Atlantic and formed Verizon. Was that it?
That might be what they told them, but they swallowed them. They swallowed them whole.
Yeah.
So it operated from 20... Is Telnet like what computer terminals use? Like,
Now, Telnet was a company.
Telnet was a company and this GTE network that E was talking about.
Yeah, and then Sprint got involved. And then you had, what was that service called where you would be able to, after a certain time at night, you'd be able to call BBSs by using the Sprint service. I forget what it's called. Nobody remembers.
Because they had nighttime calling, right? Didn't they have like evening rates and stuff?
Well, yeah, all the phone companies did, but you'd basically pay a monthly fee. PC Pursuit, that's what it was called.
Oh.
Yeah, and that would enable you nights and I think weekends you could call similar to Telenet, but you would call phone numbers, full phone numbers in other area codes. And it was a way to avoid toll charges.
Like pre-ISP.
Do you remember when back in the 80s, you can pick up a payphone and dial the operator and say, like, oh, area code and number and say, this is a police call and give a four-digit number, which would be a badge number, and they'd put the call through.
Okay, I never heard of that. But I imagine that's something that you knew about, as well as privilege calls. You would make privilege calls?
Yeah, operator privileges to get 800 numbers. And
wow. All kinds of tricks. Rebel, you should write an article about this.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get people to write articles because I'm fascinated by it.
Or 10.
You're running out of articles, I guess.
No, not at all. It's just basically I'm very interested by this, and I'm just sort of campaigning for the things that I really want to read.
People are saturated, and there's so much to talk about. It's hard to focus. So well, we want to focus on telephone stuff because that's what we talk about.
The hacker community, there are so many things in the hacker community you can talk about. And that's, you know, I'm happy that we have a magazine to do that. But, you know, I just found out today there's a massive paper shortage. Have you heard about this?
No.
Because of the pandemic, apparently, somehow this affects paper. So our printer, we're having these weird conversations with our printer. They're a printer. And they say, yeah, we have no paper. Like, well, what are we supposed to do about that? They're talking to us like we're going to solve the problem. And, of course, it's skyrocketing the price for when they do find paper. But, my God, does it ever end? I just want to get a magazine out. And, well, we can always go virtual, but we're also a printed magazine, always will be. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, it does make sense. There's been a lumber shortage for ages, which has affected like the construction industry because since the pandemic, you can't get the wood, you know. So I guess paper follows.
I don't understand why you can't get the wood in a pandemic. I mean, it's outdoors.
Okay.
And people can, you know.
Maybe we can get
stay away from other people.
Maybe the Federal Reserve will print our issue. Why not?
You know, these are our problems.
They have paper.
Shouldn't be sharing them with the world. We'll figure it out. Rebel, anything else from you? We're going to sign off.
Not that I can think of. I want to update you on that collect thing. They keep, you know, messaging, sending me text messages and, you know, calling me with recordings saying, you know, you were accepted a collect call. And
they're going to follow you for the rest of your life trying to get that $1.99 or whatever it is you owe them.
No, is it $10 or something?
$10 for 1 minute?
$10.
I think it was like, wow. That's the rate. If you call them now and ask what the rate is, it's like $10 or $5.
That's a blast from the past. You remember when calls used to
$10 unlimited?
It used to be long
distance. Unlimited.
What, you can talk forever on a collect call? I doubt that.
I don't know. I didn't know you could call the number and I called one and collect.
But calling from Long Island to Queens would be considered long distance, you know, and it would cost you a huge amount.
From the Hamptons or something. If you're in the Hamptons or something.
No, anywhere on Long Island, because you're crossing over certain zones. If you buy a border.
That's not long distance. It's not long distance. It's a toll call. Remember when calls used to be 30 cents to call from one end of Queens to Manhattan?
Yeah, that's true. Anyway,
but if you call from Flushing to Manhattan, it's 25 cents or 10 cents.
Well, I like to strip down memory lane, but this is my stop. I have to get off, and we will talk to you again soon.
Cool. Okay.
All right, take care.
Thanks for listening.
Good to hear from Rebel. Always good to hear from. So thank you, everybody, who called in. And we're going to head out. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Write to us, oth@2600.com. Don't forget to keep supporting WBAI so that we can continue doing the radio show, which is a lot of fun.
There's another launch coming up. I think China's, they're sending some.
What, tonight?
No, not tonight. They have some taikonauts going to.
Okay, well, wait, Xiangong. Stop right now. What do you call them?
Taikonauts.
So, okay, the cosmonauts, if they're from Russia, the astronauts from here, and the taikonauts.
And they're
why? Going... Why? What other word do you have a different name for it if they're from a different country?
Okay, well, in fairness, I don't think the next mission has taikonauts on it. I think it's unmanned. But anyway, they're sending stuff to Xiangong, I believe is how you
pronounce it. What if someone launches from Turkey? Do they have a special name for that? Or, you know, or Botswana?
Or India.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm sure our listeners will have something to say about that. Good night, folks. Those are you guys I'm talking to.
Ah, good night.
Traditionally,
I thought you were saying good night to the folks out there.
I already did say good night to them. Now I'm saying good night to you.
Yes, good night, everybody.
It's nice to be included. Thank you. But yes, good night.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.